Good evening. This is Mitch Miller from Sardi's East in New York. Welcome to our little party. I'm only sorry you can't see the two handsome ladies and the two rugged gentlemen gathered with me at this round table. Stuart Metz, may we have their names, please?
Yes, indeed you may, Mitch. Tonight, as each week at this time, CBS Radio brings you The Mitch Miller Show. The four sparkling personalities joining Mitch's private party at the theatrical restaurant Sardi's East this evening include the lovely screen star and beauty expert, Arlene Dahl. The bright young comedy team appearing nightly on Broadway in their own show, Mike Nichols and Elaine May. And the distinguished stage, screen, and television actor whose latest film is a Cannes Musical Festival prize winner called The Young One, Zachary Scott. Now here are Zachary Scott, Mike Nichols and Elaine May, Arlene Dahl, and radio's most listened to host of the famous and the fascinating, the beard himself, Mitch Miller.
Thank you very much, Stuart. Zachary Scott. Zach recently made a movie in Mexico, and Arlene Dahl is about to take off to do a play in Florida. But Mike Nichols and Elaine May have been braving out the winter here in New York. Audiences are keeping them warm with applause at their one-man show or two-man show, one-man-woman show on Broadway. One-man, one-woman? What is it, Mike? What do you call the art form that you two practice at the Golden Theater these evenings?
Well, it's a one-man, one-woman show. I'm a man, she's a woman.
And no other definition.
Never thought of one.
Well, I've watched your rise from nightclubs through television to success on the legitimate stage. Elaine, has going legit given you any new status around town? More respectful attention, say, from waiters, cab drivers, or your friends?
Now that I'm legitimate, I find that I do get more respect from cab drivers and waiters around town.
Would you tell us how they express themselves to you?
How they express themselves to me?
Yes, with more respect, yes.
Courteously, sometimes in Yiddish, depending on the nationality of the restaurant. They call me only by my last name. They don't ever say hey.
Or hey kid.
Or hey kid. It's Miss Kid.
Mike, do you notice any improvement in your standing in the community since you've gone into the theater?
Yes, I'm always very respectfully dressed as Mr. May.
I mean, the coat and pants match now.
Yeah.
I see. It is a beautiful suit you're wearing.
Thank you.
I know one way to command respectful attention is to wear a hat. Arlene Dahl, didn't I read somewhere recently that you won some award, the Oscar of the hat industry, for your striking chapeau?
Well, that shows that you read the woman's section of the newspaper anyway, Mitch. Yes, I was honored with the Golden Hat Award that the Millinery Institute of America gives once a year to the best-hatted women in the United States, and I was lucky enough to be on the receiving end this year.
You ever catch Miss May running out of the theater with her babushka on?
No, I haven't. Not
How
yet.
How did you know?
Well, I caught her one you night when it? I came backstage yeah. after your performance. She tore out, didn't say a word to you. Don't you speak after a performance?
This is not when we're late for something. Who didn't she speak to? You?
To you.
To me? Oh, no,
oh,
we never speak.
We don't speak except on stage.
I see. No. Well, Arlene Dahl, your hats are lovely. I was wondering if you're an agent of the Hat Trust.
Oh,
or are you a natural?
Yes.
Are you a natural-born hat fan?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I believe that there's a hat for every occasion, and to that end, I designed a boudoir cap in 1951, which was a little boudoir cap you wore to bed. So I don't know how far I can go to prove I believe in hats.
Elaine May, how do you and hats really get along?
Well, of course, Mitch, I have an enormous thing about grooming. And I think that it's one of the most important things that in my particular life, rather than my other life. And I have a hat, as a matter of fact. I have a fur hat. I have a fur hat that comes down over my ears. I have a fur hat that comes down over my ears that I wear when it's cold.
And you haven't had your hair done.
I don't need it with the fur hat that comes down over my ears.
Well, speaking of hats, Zachary Scott, I remember the big white hat that you wore in The Southerner, the movie you acted in for Jean Renoir about 15 years ago.
Yes.
And I guess all serious film fans remember The Southerner, a startlingly realistic picture of a sharecropper's family. Was that mostly made on location?
Yes, the Southerner was almost completely on location. We were in the studio about 2 weeks, the same with this film I just finished with Luis Buñuel. Both of them took about the same length of time to shoot, and they are not dissimilar in many ways.
I was going to get to
that. It's been quite some time. However, the hats are different.
Well, Renoir is a believer, isn't he, in letting story ideas develop right on the set?
Yes. He's just starting a new film shortly for 20th Century Fox. I'll be interested to see how a studio of that caliber and he got along on the hat problem. Thank you, Arlene. And also on this character development, which is more or less spontaneous. It isn't a method type of acting at all. It's simply that your ideas grow together.
Sounds like you two kids, Mike and Elaine.
Was the movie improvised in that way? You made an outline for a scene and then...
Oh, no, not wholly, no. We stuck to the script pretty muchly, but as in the film with Don Luis, the young one, if you come to a section, somebody has an idea about something, you know, that isn't right there in black and white, you can very often take out 6 or 7 pages and start off on a different tack, which I think makes for a different kind of movie and much more realistic.
Can you... Do you actually do that as the scene is in process, or do you stop
No. It's rewritten in brief outline and so forth, and you go on from there.
And now, after 15 years of more conventional pictures, you've made a movie with another movie giant, Luis Buñuel. Is that how you say it?
Buñuel.
Buñuel.
Yes.
And his work isn't very well known in this country by the general public.
Chiefly in art houses, Mitch.
It's called The Young One, and again, you play a Southerner.
That's right.
And this picture is also made on location.
And also with a hat.
That was my next subject.
Is Buñuel's approach to the art of picture making at all like Renoir's?
Only that for both gentlemen, it's a completely personal form, art form. That's why I say that in many respects, the men are alike. However, their personalities are so vastly different. Jean being much more jovial outwardly, although... Buñuel has a tremendous sense of humor. You're apt to see very little humor in his films, not that they're tragic, but he is very muchly concerned with humanity as it grows, as it lives from the time it is on this earth until it dies. There are many darker sides of humanity which he believes are all part of nature, and he therefore uses them in his films. Sort of a stamp with him, actually. You know, he's taken six Cannes prizes. This last one that he took was his sixth, which is a pretty good record.
Elaine and Mike are looking very... Say something. You want to say something, too?
No, I pretty much agree with that view of life. I was just thinking that.
I say nonsense. There are no darker sides of nature.
Aren't there really no darker sides of nature?
Well, what would you call a darker side of nature?
Well, for instance, I think the pains of the poor, the griefs of the less fortunate people, all of those, I think, are dark.
Oh, sure, if you're going to sulk about it.
No. I don't mean that, nor... I'm talking about, for instance, killing. Killing for food as opposed to
posing
murder.
Posing in the nude for food.
Per se.
Yes.
What?
No, I was just
posing in the nude for food seems darker to me than killing.
It needs quite a bit of light, as a matter of fact.
Arlene Dahl, here you are, a recent bride, and already you're being sent out to work. Ought to be a law. I hope you had time for an extended honeymoon.
Well, may I say that it was my idea, you know.
What you said. But
both of you, the bride part of it, too. But going to work, I mean, because I'm doing a stage play called Roman Candle in Palm Beach. And I always like to... I like the stage very much. It's my first love. And I like to do some stage work along with motion picture work.
I know it's at the Royal Ponciana Theater in Palm Beach, and it follows Helen Hayes.
That's
it
not
about?
Bad following, is it?
I should say not. What is Roman Candle about? Who do you play?
It's a light comedy. It's written by Sidney Sheldon, who's a screenwriter. Great talent. He, as a matter of fact, won an award, the Academy Award, for writing The Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer, and went on from there to do very many fine screenplays. And we do follow Helen Hayes in Skin of Our Teeth, with June Havoc. And my co-star is Russell Knife.
Well, I've forgotten, Arlene. Did you originally train for the stage, or weren't you gobbled up for the movies at a very tender age before you could really train for anything?
Well, I did train for the stage, Mitch, and I, as you say, gobbled up for the movies. I don't know how much they've gobbled, but I was very young when I came to Broadway, and I did two plays. One was called Mr. Strauss Goes to Boston. This was a musical. This was my first musical on Broadway for Felix Brentano. And I was all of 17. I got a principal part. I sang and danced. And the next one was called Questionable Ladies, in which I had the ingenue lead. It was a drama, sort of a takeoff on the women. And from that, I was discovered, we shall say, by Jack Warner and his associates and sent to the coast. I never thought it would take. I really didn't. And they gobbled me up.
Well, where did you grow up? You're not from a theater family, are you?
Well, I'm from Minnesota. You know where all the Scandinavians come from, yeah.
Are you, and you're Scandinavian?
Oh, folks? Yeah, Norwegian, you know, full-blooded. And, of course, I went through a lot of things to get rid of this accent, I can tell you.
Honestly, did you really
talk
about
it? Oh, yes, I studied speech while I was still going to high school, studied speech at the University of Minnesota.
Well, Zachary Scott, for all you're playing Southerners, you really are a Southerner, aren't you?
Yes, from Texas. Southwesterner, you might say.
I see. Did you have to work hard to get rid of your accent?
Yes, but it was a little easier for me because I started out in England and I was surrounded by English, as the English say it should be spoken. And in order to work there, which I did for 2 years before returning to this country, I had to lose it and lose it quickly.
And I read that you worked steadily on the English stage as a youngster for a year or more before taking a crack at Broadway.
That's right.
When you worked steadily, did you play American parts?
No, I was billed first as an Australian because of the accent. Then as my speech progressed, I wasn't billed as anything except as Zachary Scott. I was with the English Stage Company, English Repertory Company, rather. Had its headquarters in Bath, and we toured all over England all year long. I was with them for 2 years.
Mike and Elaine, you should be ripe for the British stage. I know they'd appreciate your humor fully as much as we do. Do you have any plans to take your evening with to London?
Yes, we'd like to go to London eventually. I'm not as sure as you that that
I
it would go over there.
Have you never played London?
No, we haven't. It's hard to know.
You'd appear.
Dead ringer.
Great.
Really,
dear.
Because it seems like it's rather specifically American, right? And I don't know. I think about all the American comedies that go over there and die.
Well, I think that plays are apt to have a different career, you know, as you change them from one side of the Atlantic to the other. But I don't think so in performances such as you give, which are not, would you say, straight plays. I mean, it's improvisation, and it's your own two personalities working coordinated together.
We'd have to just work in some London telephone exchanges.
Yes. Well, that sketch that you do about the adulterous English couple in the hotel lobby, have you ever tested your accents for authenticity with a frank British critic?
Well, we never know whether they're frank. They always say, yes, the accents are very good, but they're not going to say they're lousy. You know,
what can they say?
Well, they'll just say a few words in your British accent.
This is it.
Well, that's all I can say is what the GI did when he went over to England. He says, you not only stole our language, but you ruined it. Your show has the latest starting hour of any on Broadway, 9 o'clock.
Yes.
By curtain time, do you sometimes have a surly crowd in the house wondering what's happened to you because they figured it was 8:30?
No, that doesn't happen. They know it's going to be 9 o'clock. And I think a lot of the time they're glad to be able to eat their dinners and not get caught in the crush when everybody goes into the theater, you know. It's nice for us.
And how about those hours, Elaine? We're working from 9 to 11 after all these past 2-3 years in smoke-filled nightclubs. Very elegant ones, but at least the ones I saw you in. But still, you never get to bed before 6 in the morning. You couldn't work in those hours.
Well, you know, you forget. It seemed to me that would be marvelous, and it was marvelous for a while, and now I don't like that either. You know.
She resents those 2 hours.
Yes. I want to whittle it down and whittle it down.
Well, Mike Nichols, you announce all the sketches that you and Elaine may do in your show at the Golden Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And the program's mostly for Fanning itself. And that means you can vary the program without notice to anyone but the stagehands. Do you ever?
Well, we don't. People, for some reason, have a feeling that we make it up as we go along. And that's... of course, not
That's
the case.
It's a compliment, though.
Well, it is a compliment.
Yes. And, I don't know.
Well, we'll take it as a compliment. But it doesn't... we don't change the program. We change some things within each sketch sometimes. But the reason it's not listed in the program is that I prefer to make that contact with the audience and let them discover what's happening rather than to give everything a name and get to it. Mm-hmm. And then they say, yes, we know that one.
How long have you been working together, actually?
Well, as a team, I think for 3 years, and then we worked together about 3 years before that in a company.
Yeah,
they're from the Chicago school, Zachary. Tell them about that school. Well, the Goodman Theater, wasn't it?
No.
No, it was not the Goodman Theater.
Not at all.
Not at all the Goodman Theater.
Well, now, something happened in Chicago around the time we were there with people from the University of Chicago, all like unprofessional people. Yeah. And they hadn't worked in the theater, and they started a theater, and they tried that. Then they started this cabaret that we worked in.
As a matter of fact, the boy who started it had been to Europe and seen the European cabarets, where they improvise a play and they have some very social theme and the audience drinks and has great contact with the subject matter and sometimes suggests it. And he wanted to start something like that in Chicago, and did. And we were part of it.
And you are the result. That's what you meant. Have you had any nights when it's been almost impossible to coax any lines out of the audience?
I must say, luckily not. People love to yell them out.
Sometimes it takes them a while, but once they start...
You can't stop them. And they're wildly inventive sometimes.
It usually takes a man with a very deep baritone voice. The night I was there, it was silence for about the first minute, and you just looked at them, and there was a sort of nervous laughter. Then this baritone voice yelled out a line. I forget what it was. Then after that, everyone...
That's what always happens. That one starts it, and then everybody's in there. The ladies do it a lot. Mm-hmm.
Have you been thrown any completely shattering lines?
Shattering?
We've been thrown a couple of shattering lines, which we didn't take.
We've been thrown a couple of lines that we couldn't mention here, for instance, that were like arresting, you know, that we didn't take, and some brilliant lines.
Arlene Dahl, have you had a chance to catch Mike and Elaine while you've been in New York?
Well, not their one man, one woman show. I was lucky enough to catch them at the Blue Angel a while back, and I went back for I don't know how many nights. They could hardly keep me out of it.
But tell me, kids, when you come back to a place that you've played in the early days, and if all the fans are like I am, they come specially to hear the certain sketches, maybe very little variations, depending on the audience, but they wait for certain lines because that's why they love them. Yet, how is the reaction 2-3 years after you've been there the first time?
Well, we haven't done it. We did it in San Francisco when we had been there in a club about almost less than a year before we went there with the show. And aside from that, we haven't, since we don't travel much, since we're lucky enough to be able to stay in New York, thank heavens.
We haven't
gone
back to the clubs we played in the beginning.
Not even Mr. Kelly's or any of those?
No, we played Mr. Kelly's once altogether, I think.
Well, there you are. No experience.
That's it. You said it.
Arlene Dahl, after all the movies you've made, do you find that you get more of a lift from acting before people than cameras?
Well, I think most actors do feel that their contact with something live is much more satisfactory than with a mechanical camera, for instance, in which they have to rely on the director to tell them whether they're good or bad. You know, an actor or an actress on stage can feel the audience reaction, you know, and know whether they're on the right track or whether they're cold, for instance, that night. And it's terribly exciting. You know, I don't think there's anything that will ever replace the theater for an actor or an actress.
When you're making a movie, do you find yourself using the crew on the set as an audience, looking for reactions, say, from electricians?
Always, but when they react, they have to reshoot the scene, you know.
Zachary Scott, do you think of yourself as playing to a live audience, even when you're shooting a movie scene?
Well, I think that, too, depends upon the crew, and I think it depends a great deal upon the director. Naturally, an actor can't watch for his reactions, which is about the only way, as Arlene has said, because any noise would destroy the soundtrack. But I got much more real, genuine pleasure out of playing to an audience. I think almost anybody in show business does, no matter what particular field of it he's in.
Well, I don't imagine you collected much of a crowd to watch the shooting of The Young One.
You'd be amazed.
Really? Because those locations in Mexico were pretty remote, weren't they?
Some of them, yes, but we shot for several weeks outside of Acapulco, and while the terrain is rather rugged, it was possible to get through by automobile, of necessity, of course, and we found that we had a great number of visitors who came out.
Do you have
they
any...
They will search you out.
I'm sorry, I didn't...
No, I say that we'll search you out if they know a company is shooting.
Do you have any location anecdotes or adventures that you can tell us?
On this particular picture?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a very good one about anecdotes about a picture. I'm always so involved and so concerned with getting it done and done right that I sort of forget to collect.
Yes.
I sort of forget to... Many things do happen, Mitch, you know. It's rather hard to recall them on a moment's notice.
Can you tell me, why was the young one shot in Mexico when it's actually set in the United States?
Well, at the time of year, which was January, that we wanted to shoot, the weather was not good on the islands off the coast of the Carolinas, which is where the story takes place, so we imported the company to Mexico, where Don Luis Buñuel is a citizen, and he prefers, really, to shoot in Mexico whenever he can. And because of Gabriel Figueroa's brilliant search for locales that were comparable to the ones in the Carolinas, we were able to find exactly what we needed there.
The story I've heard is a pretty strong one. Can you give us a little of its flavor?
Well, I might titillate your imagination by saying we've beaten Lolita to the post. Basically, the picture is one of chase, not of the older man after the younger girl, as might be imagined.
But this particular...
it's the chase of three men with varying degrees of prejudice, hate, and so forth that they've been brought up with. The main theme is the genuine love of a rather inarticulate man, aged 45, for a young girl of 13, and her love for him. But the two are uneducated people, for the most part. He is a game warden. And in the love scenes which take place between these two characters, you find them talking about other things, but simply because they can't express this very strange love that they have for one another. It's very delicately handled, and it might interest you to know the decency code has seen fit to let us put it into a commercial house, the Victoria, here. And we will be opening simultaneously at two movie houses in Los Angeles on the 18th. Hollywood and in Hollywood and the downtown in Los Angeles itself.
Well, I think a change of pace to comedy is called for here, and I have just the ticket. Ken, what do you say that we do Mike Nichols and Elaine May? Because they were foolish enough to record much of their Broadway show on an album called, of course, An Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May. And have you restricted a sale like football games on television to 50 miles from the Golden Theater?
It's not much of the show. It's highlights. It's, I would say, a fifth of the show.
Did you record this at an actual performance?
Yes.
Yes.
I haven't heard it yet. Set up for the disc jockey one. Because I found on the album an old favorite of mine among your numbers. And there was one, the scientist, on the telephone with his mother. But I think we haven't time enough for the disc jockey, so can we do that?
Please.
This is a scene about name-dropping in show business. You've heard the kind of thing. It goes roughly like this.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Ego broadcasting from the Tip Top Lounge atop New York City's beautiful Ansonia Hotel. We're very, very lucky to have with us tonight, sitting right here next to me, lovely Miss Barbara Musk, who is in town. Barbara's publicizing her latest motion picture, Two Gals in Paris. How are you, Barbara?
I'm fine.
I really wish you could get a good look at her, ladies and gentlemen. I want to tell you right here now, Barbara, you're a very, very good-looking little cookie. You really are. I mean, I wish you was television, sweetheart, because you're just about as good-looking as they come. You really are. I mean it.
Well, thank you.
That's okay.
No, but seriously. I just want to say, Jack, that it's a real great pleasure to be on the show tonight. And a real great pleasure to be here.
How about that? Barbara, I know this will interest you, sweetheart. I was talking to a very, very dear friend of mine today. He's a very, very old friend, very close, very, very wonderful friend. Bernard Baruch. Bernie is a heck of a good kid. I love him. I tell you the thing about Bernie, he's not like a lot of your financiers. By that I mean he's not out only for money, and that's a very, very terrific thing to see. We're all crazy about Bernie. What do you say, sweetheart?
Actually, Jack, I think you're right.
How about that?
Really, no, but I do. I think that Bernie is a real great guy. And, you know, I mean, a real great financier. Just, you know, but really, just for me personally, I think he's, you know, like one of the greatest.
Isn't she terrific? Isn't that just terrific? Terrific, sweetheart. Just terrific. I saw Bernie. I know you'd be interested. I saw Bernie at the house of another very, very close personal friend. He's very old, very dear, very, very wonderful friend. Bertrand Russell. Bert is a lot of fun. He's not like a lot of your philosophers. By that I mean he's not pushy, you know? And that's a terrific thing to see. We're all crazy about Bert. What do you say, sweetheart?
Actually, Jack, I think you're right.
How about that?
No, really, and I do. I mean, I think that for me personally, at any rate, I think that a pushy philosopher is always a drag. seriously. That really is why it's just so great to see Bert, you know? I mean, because he comes into a room and he isn't. No, but, like, to me, I mean, that's the greatest.
Isn't that terrific?
Great.
Terrific, honey.
Well,
yes, terrific.
Thank you.
Sweetheart, I understand from the Pope that you just finished a movie.
He just can't keep a secret.
From their new album, an original cast album, I might add, Mike Nichols and Elaine May, who play the title roles in An Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May on Broadway. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. I'm afraid Vincent Sardi, who wants his restaurant back and CBS Radio, is asking for the return of its network. My thanks to all of you on this visit. Arlene Dahl, I envy you for going off to Palm Beach in this blustery weather, and I envy the folks down there who will be watching you in Roman Candle. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mike Nichols and Elaine May, off you go to the Golden Theater for another performance of your very funny show, An Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May, much of which is now obtainable on an LP of the same name. And Zachary Scott, I'll be watching for the opening of Louis, now how do you say it, Buñuel?
Buñuel.
Buñuel. You can never tell it from the spelling. Louis Buñuel. That picture's called The Young One, and in which you star. And, of course, you have a five-minute radio show every day of the week, don't you?
On CBS.
Right. And this picture won a prize at the Cannes Festival and is sure to stir great interest in this country from what I hear. And to my listeners, I'll be back next week at this same time. I think we'll have fun, so try to make it. Until then, this is Mitch Miller from Sides East in New York saying good night and have a good week. Thank you.